Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Dinga and the Road to the Garden podcast. I am off the road today, abandoned by Tommy. He just abandoned me. So naturally, Tommy sends me a message and says, there's only one person you can have on who would play. We don't want to ruin our reputation, whatever that is. That's how you do it.
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. It is my pleasure to fill in for Tommy. I'm about a tenth of the man he is, even in my dreams. In real life, I'm probably a 20th of who he is. But hey, we're here. It'll be fun.
Yeah, Thompson's on a work trip, so that's me and Chris breaking down the games. We don't need to do like a long ass intro. We'll get to some bit. I'm just gonna point this out off the top before we get into the games. Tommy, I think he made a joke about it on the show, but last week Tommy tells me, you know, John Rothstein says he's the only college basketball show that happens 52 weeks a year. So we need to make ours 52 weeks a year, no matter what we're talking about. Even if we just talk about food for 4 minutes on an episode, we need to have an episode out so we can say we're a college basketball podcast that came out 52 weeks a year. Tommy didn't show up this week. A week after he said it, the next episode. Come on, Thompson. What are you doing, buddy? But let's get into the games because I think that's what people are here for. Do we want to start with UConn's run and then the preview of the San Diego State game?
So, yeah, sure. Yeah. UConn looked great. Let's start there.
But before we get into the games this week, let's hear a quick word from our friends over at Rhythm. You already know March is filled with unpredictability and thrilling upsets, but what if AI could help you navigate the chaos and win some bets? We all want some coin. Enter Rhythm, the AI sports betting app for player props and game picks. Rhythm stands at the forefront of innovation, offering sports enthusiasts a cutting-edge tool to elevate their college basketball betting experience. The app leverages data sets, historical trends, player statistics, and so much more to help craft the perfect picks for you. If you head to the link in our bio and on house-enterprise.com, you can enter for free to find a set of picks perfectly tailored for you to conquer March. Filter Rhythm suggestions by teams, props, and more to help create the perfect picks that fit your fandom. Download Rhythm, that's R-I-T-H-M-M, create your account, and find your picks and win big. Note, House Enterprise and Rhythm are not responsible for any loss, wages, or picks you make. Gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-GAMBLER. Shout out to our friends at Rhythm for sponsoring the show.
They beat Stetson. I should pull up the score, but just know it was a lot to a little. Poor Jalen Blackman didn't have the game like, you know, we wanted him to have. And then they play the Fighting Boo Booies at Northwestern, and that game went, I think, about as we expected it to on the show, if Northwestern made it. I picked FAU. FAU did not win. They beat Northwestern very badly. UConn's really good. They looked flawless, and Dan Hurley's still pissed somehow.
Yeah. They were a ton of fun, right? Like, every single game, it seems like, they just find new reasons for me to believe in them 1,000% that they can get to the Final Four and win this thing. They held Boo Booey to just 9 points, which is, I believe, one of his lowest scoring outings this year, maybe second lowest off the top of my head. But yeah, really impressive stuff from the Huskies.
As Boo Booey's game log loads up, he averaged 19 a game this year. I mean, the moment he had, not this is a Big East show, but the moment he had with Chris Collins when he came off the court, basically hugged him and said, like, we did this together. Thank you. I love you. That was awesome. That hit the heartstrings. But just looking at it, Bowie, yeah, he had 9 at Nebraska in a game they lost. He had 5 in a game against Detroit Mercy. Had 9 against Mississippi State on a neutral, and that is it. So it was tied for his second lowest scoring performance of the year.
Yeah, wow.
So UConn's defense, yeah.
And Detroit Mercy, I mean, that was a blowout. Yeah. We could kind of throw that one out. He probably played 20 minutes. But
yeah, so.
There's really not too much to comment on. They're up 40-18, I think, was the halftime score. And yeah, it was over with 10 minutes into the game.
They're so good. So the matchup with San Diego State, you know, I'll let you talk about it first because I think I have a take that our listeners might not love. So how do you think that game plays out? What do you think? What are your thoughts on it? The national title game, I should add. That should be a narrative we talk about.
It does. There's an edge, right? Like, from a betting perspective, you kind of look at things like a rematch or a revenge angle. But it starts and ends with Jaden Ledee. When you talk San Diego State, and he's just a force down low. If you haven't seen him yet this year, he's just, you know, he's probably the strongest guy in college basketball, like pound for pound. He just bullies people down low, draws a ton of fouls, and has a pretty sweet, like, little mid-range jumper to his game, too. Donovan Klingon you haven't seen a big like him. I'm not saying he's the best big you've seen this year. There's a lot of great ones in the Big East, but he is unique. But to me, the guard play, like Darian Trammell is San Diego State's point guard. He's like 5'9". It says 5'10 online. That's real generous. Tristan Newton, like his length should be a problem, and he's quick enough to stick with him. I don't think San Diego State has the guard play to compete here. What do you think?
Yeah, so with Ladee, one thing they did interesting in the UAB game was UAB ran this like extended 1-3-1 press. They would just find a way to get him the ball in the high post. And Ladee is a guy who can take you off the dribble. Like, he is good off the bounce too. You mentioned how physically strong he is, and you're right. And he can also kind of step out and hit a jump shot. Ladee is like truly special. Like, he's shooting, granted not on a ton of volume, but he's shooting 45% from three this season. Like, that's got to count for something. He can step out and hit a jumper on, he's shooting about one attempt a game, making it about half the time. So,
yeah.
Ladee is like special. And I think he actually is a matchup problem for UConn because he is so physically strong, but he is also someone who can take a clinging out of the paint and maybe clinging gets in foul trouble. Then it's Samson Johnson, and that's barbecue chicken. That's not even like disrespectful to Samson Johnson. Jaden Ladee is just one of, I mean, the dude wasn't he an All-American?
He was first team All-American.
At San Diego State, that's crazy. That's kind of unheard of. Yeah. Really impressive there. I think also San Diego State, I think something with UConn and kind of they're the best team in the Big East, obviously, but part of why I think they were able to beat Marquette as they did, to beat Creighton when they beat them as dominantly as they did, and kind of run through the conference with only losses early season Seton Hall and then that Creighton game pretty late. There wasn't a team like, you need to be able to switch a lot of the off-ball action they run, and it can be like physically strong and kind of push them around a little bit. I think San Diego State can do that. So I think they can create enough problems to keep this game competitive much more than the last two games in particular. Like the 11, I'm not betting it right now, but I lean San Diego State at plus 11. Just talking spreads. I think UConn wins the game, but I think Ladee is a matchup problem. Like, he is a completely different dude than he was last year. Like, you might not even remember the name if you were a UConn fan watching this game last year, the national title game, but he's averaging 21.5 this year. The dude is special. He didn't start that game. He started all 35 games this year. He's taken his game to a completely new level, and he's old. I think he's 24, 25. So he's an old college player. I think the physicality San Diego State plays with, the fact that they can switch those off-ball movements, I think it makes this game more interesting than maybe the title game was last year. But yeah, I think UConn's just too good.
Right. It's, you know, I will say also kind of looking at their, you know, their team sheet, they only have lost to NCAA tournament teams. They're very consistent. They don't drop bad losses, and they have an awful lot of chances to drop bad losses in the Mountain West. I take that back. They have one loss to UNLV, so scratch that. But all of the rest of their losses, all nine of them, are NCAA tournament teams. And they play really good defense. The defensive tenacity they bring is going to be somewhat unique to UConn as well. Marquette brings a similar sort of edge to them, but San Diego State, they're feisty, man.
Yeah, not the same like tenacity that San Diego State brings. Like, San Diego State's the ninth best defense in KenPom. I believe that would rank second in the Big East to UConn. Yeah, so it's one of the better defenses UConn has faced in a while. And like, they play with that physical edge. I think that really helps them in this matchup. But one thing that really leaps off the page to me, and why I don't know if they're the team that can pull off the upset, is they're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country. It's their only red thing on KenPom. 31.8% from three. Straight up, if you're going to beat UConn, you got to hit some shots from the outside. Like, you just have to. And I think this game can be low scoring. I do think San Diego State keeps it more competitive than the national title game last year, even if this isn't as talented and as good a San Diego State team as last year's. But yeah, I get UConn.
Yeah, the two, if you are a UConn fan listening and you remember that game vividly, the two main pieces gone are Matt Bradley, who's kind of their do everything guard / forward guy that, and I mean, he had the ball in his hands 80% of possessions. And then Nate Mensah down low was their center, their rim protector. They don't have that force anymore. Ladee is not, you know, a huge big shot blocker, but he certainly is a presence at the rim. Yeah, agreed. There's, you know, I don't really have much else other than it's probably closer, but man, I don't know. UConn should roll.
Yeah, we'll stick with UConn here. Who do you think is the tougher? We can kind of mini preview both games, but who do you think is the tougher matchup for UConn between Illinois and Iowa State?
Oh, Illinois, 1,000%, not even close to me. Iowa State, a team that plays really solid defense but doesn't score very well, is just not that. That wouldn't be that hard of a matchup for UConn, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think UConn, if they get Iowa State, one thing Iowa State does really well is they force a ton of turnovers, but I don't think UConn's really going to turn the ball over. I think the only way Iowa State can win that game is if they really, really pressure Tristan Newton and get the ball out of his hands quick. But
yeah,
UConn's just got so much size, and I think they're bigger and, quite frankly, just kind of significantly more talented than Iowa State. Like, yeah. I think Iowa State has really overperformed for the talent level they have. Credit to guys like Taman Lipsey, Milan Mumcilovic, who's a freshman, Keyshawn Gilbert. But yeah, that's not a team I'd worry about. Illinois, though, I think Illinois presents some problems for Iowa State. But I want to hear your thoughts first, because you are the guest and you love Illinois much more than I do.
Shucks. Yeah, no, Illinois certainly could pose problems, right? They're the best offense in the country on KenPom. They could just get really hot from deep. They have two explosive playmakers in Terrence Shannon and Marcus Damask. The down low play is, I don't know, erratic, I guess maybe, yeah, is the word with Coleman Hawkins and Dane Danger, but there's enough skill there too that could make things at least difficult and bring Klingon out of the paint, get him on the perimeter. You know, Coleman Hawkins could probably draw some fouls on, you know, driving situations, and then Samson Johnson plays the majority of the second half. There's certainly a game script where Illinois wins the game.
Yeah, and TJ Shannon, for his faults, is an excellent basketball player. Okay. Just so talented. He's unlike anything UConn has gone up against all season. Just wing, one probably the best slasher in the country. The dude just gets to the rim at will. And he's got a jump shot too. Like, at 6'5", he is going to be a really tough cover. I'm assuming they're going to put Castle on him like they did with Boo Booey. And Castle really shut down Boo Booey. But it's a completely different cover with TJ Shannon. And I think he is going to create significant problems for UConn if that is the matchup. One thing that I think is interesting is if we look at, like, defensive force turnover percentage on KenPom, Iowa State is second in the country, it says, only to UTEP. And then we scroll all the way down. Illinois, the other team they match up with, is 360th. Only above South Dakota, in the Summit, and Creighton. So completely different contrast in how those teams defend.
Yeah, interesting. Huh. Yeah, so if you're a UConn fan, it sounds like we're both in agreement. Probably going to be a Cyclones person I think that's the Thursday game. The last Thursday game. Yeah.
Dan Hurley was pissed that they're playing on Thursday. Did you see that?
I did see that.
Yeah. Just another reason the committee's against him. He does have that chip on his shoulder. That's such a Dan Hurley thing to say. It's so on brand.
It's fantastic. I love Dan Hurley.
Character of Dan is great. Do we have any thoughts on either of the two future matchups, or do we want to move on to the Marquette Golden Eagles?
I suppose we could move on. I you know, we could talk about who we want to see them play in the in the West, but
That's next episode. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, do you have any real thoughts on the West and, like, how those teams – real, real brief, if you really want to just go for it, Paul?
I kind of don't. That was the region that I think if St. John's was there, if Seton Hall was there, I'm not going to harp on it again, I promise, but they could have made a run, could have done something, because none of those teams are all that special to me and all that consistent in Arizona's case.
Not consistent at all, but I do want to – I will – if they were the 11 against Clemson, I would have picked both of them, and to Clemson's credit, they made me look foolish twice. So I think Clemson probably would have actually won that game, just seeing as how Clemson played this week. But we don't need to talk about that. We will move on to the Marquette Golden Eagles. They match up after – I mean, first-round game, they were kind of scared in the first half against my Hilltoppers at Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
The fast pace got him, and just the physical, like on the ball, like they were just driving, and Western Kentucky was just like, okay, like this is how we want to play this game. And once kind of Kolick really got settled in, it just was like, all right, this game is going Marquette's way. They're getting shots from the outside. Eventually those are going to fall. Then they started falling, but Western Kentucky was able to pressure ball handlers for a little bit. I was impressed with the Hilltoppers. Like that, I did mention it on the show. You cannot overlook this team, and they will keep it fairly competitive. And they did until they just kind of ran out of gas, but it's a really well-coached team there. And then Colorado, that game was so much fun.
That was fun. I think Shaka Smart said this, and I wholeheartedly agree, which he was like, I think this is one of the best 10 seeds I've ever seen. And they were just not 10 seed material. Like that, the skills were there for Colorado to be like a 5 seed. No foul on Marquette for that game being exceptionally close.
Yeah, Colorado really, I feel like this is honestly the best version of Colorado we saw all season. Like, they were peaking to the end of the season. I think they are playing their best ball now. Credit to Marquette winning that game. KJ Simpson is an excellent guard, and he showed that. Tristan Da Silva is a really tough cover for Marquette. I feel like he's the kind of guy, just that kind of build that you're looking at. I feel like you're looking at a team in the future who's going to play Marquette because NC State doesn't have this guy. If they have a guy like a Tristan Da Silva, who granted is a once in a, I mean, what, few people in the country play like Tristan Da Silva does, like have the size and skill. But he's kind of the matchup that you're looking at Marquette and you're like, that's a problem. They dealt with him and Eddie Lampkin inside. They kind of exposed him. Really fun game, but Cam Jones is just so good. So good.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. And looking forward to this game. You and I have a very similar thought on this one, so I'll let you take it first. At least what I presume your thought is, just based on some of the conversations we've had.
Interesting. Because, I don't think we have specifically talked about this one, but I think Marquette rolls in this game. DJ Burns is a unique cover again for them down low. He's so big and strong, but Oso should be just fine. Oso is, you know, he's one of the better defenders in the country to me. Top 20 type of top 30 type of defender. And then the guard play, I'm not all that afraid of. Sorry, but not all that afraid of Jaden Taylor, Casey Morcel. DJ Horn is an interesting one. He used to play at Arizona State. Now he's at NC State. He can get really hot from three, and that could be an area where maybe NC State makes 15 threes and Marquette just kind of gets unlucky by, you know, variance of shot making. But on paper, this one seems to match up pretty well for Marquette.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Marquette kind of rolls in this spot. The guard play is just better of Marquette. I will say with Casey Morcel, you kind of dismissed him a bit. He's an excellent defender. I think he's the best defender on this NC State team, just all around. So he's going to have to guard one of Kolek or Jones. The problem is he can't guard both. And just the other defenders at NC State aren't anything special. And NC State is a good but not like great offensive team. Like, they're best at just not turning the ball over and just kind of ISOing and just kind of making plays for themselves. They like to drive and finish there. And DJ Burns is a tough cover, as Chris mentioned. But when I look at what I expect Marquette to do just offensively, they're going to be the exact same Marquette they've been the last few games, just run all that DHO, that off-ball kind of action, just getting a ton of guys moving, running, switching sides of the court like four times. DJ Burns cannot cover Oso. He can't. He's not mobile enough. And he cannot.
That PNR is just going to be yucky. Yeah.
No. And in turn, anytime they try to run a guy, even off a dribble handoff, like, he's just going to be lost. And Morcel can guard one of them and probably get fight over a couple screens, and he'll have to do that. But Horn, Taylor, O'Connell, those guys are not doing that. And I don't think there's a matchup where NC State presents significant problems for Marquette. Aside from Burns and down low, I think he presents some problems, but I think Oso can handle it. And aside from that, a team that runs a lot of four guards, that plays right into Marquette's alley when Marquette's four guards are just better.
Health-wise, what percent do you think Tyler Kolek's playing at right now?
I thought he was fairly close to 100, honestly.
Me too. Yeah.
I think like the fact that they... So what I will say, I said this on another show, and I'll say this here too. If Marquette would have lost to Colorado, who is really talented, like, not taking anything away from Colorado, they early season, we neither of us liked them. They got a lot better to the end of the season. But if Marquette had lost that game because of how they sat Tyler Kolek, that would have been that would have been a killer. You sat Kolek solely for this run. You gave up the Big East for this run. If you would have lost before the Sweet 16,
Yeah, that would not have been... If they would have lost, before this game, the Shaka Smart haters would be in full force of talking about his March success in the last 7 years.
Yeah, so they won that game. I think that was very important for the school. And they have, I mean, you and I both, we agree completely. They have an excellent matchup in this spot. I think this is a game I think Marquette rolls here. I don't see the prop. Aside from shooting 15 threes, and NC State, keep in mind, is 138th in the country three-point percentage at 34%. They don't get a ton of their points from three. They don't take a ton of threes either, which I think also plays into Marquette's hand. They will settle for those long twos. Like, if there's some Marquette data nerds, NC State will settle for those long twos. How does NC State win this game if they do?
It's a good question. Yeah. They don't, Marquette does get some breakaways and they force some turnovers. NC State doesn't turn it over at all. So maybe Marquette just doesn't get out in transition very much. And I feel like they get a lot of baskets that way.
Yeah.
Or at least feeding off, that sort of momentum, getting out and running and then start setting something up in the backcourt after a transition look. So I don't know. Yeah, maybe they just take care of the basketball, score it a pretty high points per possession clip, and you know, it's a high score. I don't see how they stop Marquette,
yeah.
But maybe it's just a high scoring game in like the 80s, and yeah, you know, they eke one out.
I don't know. Just looking at the matchup, Marquette has a better guard. Marquette runs, I think, a better system. I think just kind of this everything plays into Marquette's favor. I struggle to see where NC State has an individual advantage aside from DJ Burns posting up. That's really
right. But that is a big advantage, right? He's fantastic. He's the best post passer to me, maybe in the country for someone his size. He's really good at it.
Yeah. But one thing Marquette does really well defensively is they scramble defensively really well. They're one of the better teams just pure scrambling. And I think that can take away a lot of what Burns does, especially because there are a couple of shooters. Like Jaden Taylor is not a great 3-point shooter. Casey Marcel is not a great 3-point shooter. There's a reason that team takes a lot of long twos, because they're better from that mid-range area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Do we both think Marquette plays Houston?
Actually, in my bracket, I had Duke. I continue to have Duke. I think they're peaking at the right time. Houston, I don't know, man. There's problems there. Yeah. It's a little bit smelly. They almost lost to A&M down the stretch. They foul a ton. Duke doesn't give up a bunch of offensive rebounds. I think they play Duke. I don't know.
Okay. Well, we'll break down both games because you and I disagree here. How do you think the Marquette-Duke game goes? Because I think Duke is a much better matchup than Houston.
Man.
Oh.
Stylistically, you're right. 1,000% you're right. But Duke, the NBA talent, just scares me, right? You're facing three guys that are going to have a very profitable career ahead of them. Maybe four, you can make a case. But so I don't know. I think I'd rather face Houston just from a pure talent level. But yeah, stylistically, Duke is certainly not as scary. They're lackluster on defense, and offensively, you know, it's a lot of the same action to me, at least from what I've seen. But Houston tends to be a little bit more scrappy.
Yeah, I think that we'll talk about the Duke game first. I think the guard matchup in the Duke game would be really interesting. You have Kolick and Jones versus Roach, McCain, and I guess we can call Proctor a guard too. And we'll throw Stevie Mitchell in there too. Those three guards going up against each other, because they are two teams that run three guards.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. And same thing, Oso and Kyle Filipowski, probably about as similar as you're going to find in this tournament a matchup if those two match up against each other, because both are bigs who can put the ball on the floor. Filipowski's probably a better jump shooter. Oso's a better passer. There's obviously certain things that make these guys different, but just kind of like broad strokes, those guys are fairly similar in how they are big men. And then a Joplin versus a Mark Mitchell. Those guys are completely different. Joplin's more a 3-point shooter, like set shot kind of guy. Mark Mitchell's just a straight slasher. I think it'd be a very interesting game. I think it is important to note, if they do play Duke, we are not getting any Caleb Foster. He is out. He will not be coming back for Duke this season. He's another 6'5 guard. They run off the bench. So Duke isn't the deepest team. Now there's Marquette. But Marquette's been running some Chase Ross quite a bit. Duke doesn't have their guy who would be their Chase Ross, but I think just the starting lineup would make this a very interesting game. God, I didn't even think I'd talk about this one, so I have no idea. I want to hear what your thoughts on it would be, then I'll get back to a prediction, because I can do that now.
Kyle Filipowski on Evan Maya is the 7th best player in the country. He's, you know, their do everything sort of power forward slash center. He plays center for Duke, but that wouldn't be what he plays in the NBA, at least in my opinion. His matchup with Oso would determine things. He's a pretty good defender on pick and roll situations, so Marquette would have a little bit more trouble against Duke than certainly NC State. But you know, that being said, I think the same thing goes the other way. Oso would be able to contain a lot of what they do. I don't know. That would truly be kind of a coin flip to me. I still would give the edge to Marquette, but that's just because I think they're the better team overall, but it's close.
It is very close. I tend to think I'd give the edge. I don't want to fucking pick Duke, Jesus. I think I'd give the edge to Duke. Duke's an excellent shooting team. I think that's one thing that I think would really like hurt Marquette, because Duke would be one of the better shooting teams they've played all season. Just going by KenPom, Purdue is one of the is the best 3-point shooting team in the country. Marquette played Purdue, lost, but like that's a completely different team. Other than that, I don't think Marquette played Baylor. They just played Colorado, who was able to light them up from deep. Now they're playing a team that shoots it about as well as Colorado does in Duke. Jared McCain, when he's on, that kid is just a straight laser. I think the tempo would be a huge factor in this one, because if you can get out and run against Duke, they are bad. If Duke plays in a half-court game, Duke is really good. which is really weird. It feels weird to say that because like Duke just kind of has a ton of athletes, but they're significantly better in a half court setting. It is not close. So I think the tempo would determine that game. I would ever so slightly in Duke because I think it's easier to slow down a game than speed it up. And Duke does. He's not Tyler Kolek, but Jeremy Roach is a really good veteran point guard. He's really solid. He knows how to get the ball to the, in the hands of guys. And I think Mark Mitchell is kind of like a Tristan Da Silva in the sense that I think he's going to be a really tough cover for Marquette. I think he's going to be able to get downhill, and I think he could make some plays for himself and others. And then you'll get a couple of McCain and McCain threes, couple looks from Roach, and I think Proctor will have a decent game. He's looked better to end the season. I would lean Duke, but yeah, I agree with your sentiment that it's just a straight coin flip.
It's interesting because, yeah, you mentioned the tempo balance, and the same thing could be said for Houston, right? To transition to that one, that's another really slow team. They're, I think, 346th in adjusted tempo, so they want to slow it down too. So I think at both of these games, if it's a higher pace game, Marquette probably wins.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think that? Because I think you're a little bit less optimistic than maybe me in that matchup. What do you think of the Houston Marquette?
Yeah, I think Houston would just take it to Marquette. Yeah. Houston isn't the greatest offensive team. They're 14th in offense in KenPom, but like you look at the percentages from three, they shoot 35% about. From two, they shoot 49%. From the free throw line, 69%. But one thing Houston does really well, two things they do really well, is they don't turn the ball over, but they are an excellent offensive rebounding team. Marquette is a bad defensive rebounding team. That is their one weakness. They're not a good defensive rebounding team. Houston, I think, would take advantage of that. Houston just bigger, more physical. I think they can bully Kolek a little bit, bully Cam Jones out of the spots they want to get to. Take away a lot of that action Marquette wants to run. I think they can take away a lot of those DHOs that Marquette likes. And I think they will just bully them on the glass. I think it could be a game where Houston has 20-plus offensive rebounds. I think it is important to note for Houston that I believe we are without we're without Joseph Tugler, just one of their bench rebounders, freshman. But I think Houston has the guards to match up with Marquette. I think Jamal Shedd, if Tyler Kolek is not the best point guard in the country, keyword if, because I think he is, but if he's not, your argument has to be Jamal Shedd in my mind. Shedd is that good. He is special. And Cryer, Sharp, I think, can hit shots. Damian Dunn coming off the bench. Jawan Roberts, they have so many guys that just play so physically. And I think that is Marquette's weakness. I really do. I think Houston would be a really bad matchup for Marquette. I think they're the worst matchup for Marquette in the entire field.
Wow. Okay. Maybe. I can see the argument, right? Shedd is truly fantastic, and they're more physical, better on the boards than Marquette is, Houston. But I don't know. Houston doesn't shoot free throws well at all.
Yeah.
And so, yes, they would probably get their fair share of licks on the offensive glass. But I think Marquette has similar bodies where they can, you know, they're fairly deep, and they can, if they pick up some fouls, like, it's not going to hurt Marquette a ton, unless it's like Oso or Kolek, in my opinion, or Cam Jones. But I don't know. I think Marquette can cycle bodies around Ben Gold, and Oso can hold their own enough. And then outside of Shedd, there's no one that really scares me. Like, Cryer and Sharp both are capable of having big days, but they're certainly not all that consistent offensively. There's a reason why Iowa State beat this team by 40 points like a week ago. Houston just kind of, I don't think we're even going to see this matchup, but I think Marquette would be just fine in this one.
Yeah, that's interesting. You and I completely disagree on this one. Also, Cryer is averaging 15 points a game. There's that. Yeah. And Sharp literally just went for 30.
He did. And he didn't even play the whole game. He fouled out.
Yeah, I think there's two different perspectives. Look.
Yeah.
Chris can be wrong. I can be right. It's fine. We're allowed to do that, you know?
Yeah, like the Auburn-Yale game. One of us was wrong. One of us. Continue. I'm losing the plot here.
That is such a bad pick by me. Oh, my God. Like, I saw it coming, too. But I still think if that game happened, if that game plays 10 times, I think.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, not nine. I would go 7-3. Maybe 8-2. But, yeah.
Yeah. Just general sentiment. Do we have any thoughts on Marquette Final Four potential matchups? Like, if they end up getting there, like, who would you want to play? Who would you not want to play? Or just move straight to Creighton, your team?
Let's move straight, and then we can talk about maybe those two matchups or two regions together. Yeah.
All right. You're the Creighton guy. I'll just let you go first because you're not going to like what I have to say. How do you think Creighton match up with Tennessee?
So I've watched three Tennessee games in the last, 48 hours. Trying to think of how this one, you know, shakes out. And it's interesting because initially I was like, well, there's no way Creighton can guard Dalton Connect. He's too big for Trey Alexander, which is Creighton's best defender. And he's too fast for Baylor Shireman, which is the other option on the wing. And that's a real problem. Dalton Connect, if Zach Edey wasn't a human being right now, Dalton Connect's probably the national player of the year. So if you don't have somebody to match up with him, he's probably going to have a day, right? Especially when he's coming off like a pretty poor shooting performance against Texas. So I like that side for Tennessee. But on the other way, Connect's not a great defender either. And who guards Trey Alexander? Because the guy Ziegler will guard Ashworth. He's too small to guard Alexander to me. And so then it's either Santiago Vescovi or, I mean, I don't know if you want. I honestly don't know who they put on Trey Alexander. So he should have a good day too. Because it would have to be either Vescovi or Connect. And I assume it's Vescovi, and he's not that good at defense either.
Do you assume JJJ then guards Shireman? Because I think he's very good defensively.
He is. I thought he would guard Miller, honestly.
No.
He's the second biggest guy in there.
Yeah, put a smaller guy in Miller, because Miller's not going to like beat you on the block.
Yeah, then he could go off on the boards, though. Miller's athletic. He could get a few offensive rebounds. One interesting thing for you, I can kick it over to you for your take, but guess who's the sixth best player on Tennessee on Evan Maya?
Sixth best?
Dalton Connect. Sixth best player.
Yeah, I don't buy that a lick.
I don't know, but then you dig into the numbers, right? And obviously, offensively, he is, he's super, super good, but it's not like he is, the most efficient guy in the country. he's awesome, but a bunch of he shoots more than almost anyone in the country. 33% when he's on the floor, 33% of Tennessee's shots come from him. So if you find a way to game plan around him, like, that really limits what Tennessee is going to do.
So if I was Creighton, my game plan would literally be let Dalton Connect do whatever he does, just leave him in isolation and just try to stop everyone else. Like, if Dalton Connect scores 40, but if the other five guys combined to score 75 points, I think we can find a way to hit whatever, right? Just give him whatever he needs. And obviously 40 that's a lot of points,
Right.
And one thing that I think Tennessee does sometimes is when they get into a rut, like offensively or like in a close game, it's literally just throw the ball to Dalton Connect, get out of the way. Dalton Connect, Dalton Connect, Dalton Connect. And they just go ISO mode. And I think that is probably Creighton's best path to winning. But no, I like Tennessee in the spot quite a bit. I think Zakai Ziegler is going to have Steven Ashworth in hell with pressure. I think that is the best way to defend Ashworth. I'm a huge fan of ball pressure just in general, but especially in this matchup. I think he's going to have him in hell. Chris mentioned they don't have a cover for Dalton Connect. And they're right. Creighton doesn't have a cover for Dalton Connect, but guess what? Nobody does either. But I think that's just a tough matchup for them. And I think a guy and defensively, like you mentioned on Alexander, I think you can throw a triple J on one of them. And then I think Vescovi can get up in the other. And then you can throw either a Connect. Yeah, and then you can throw Connect on Mason Miller. Is that going to cause a real problem? Not really. So you can kind of hide Dalton Connect there. And I think inside, I think the way to beat Kalkbrenner is to be physical with him. And AD was physical. Awaka is physical. And Creighton doesn't really draw fouls. So we might not see a ton of Tobey Awaka if they don't draw fouls. Granted, I love Tobey Awaka. He's one of my favorite players in the country. Little, like, those, like, smaller but big dudes who play mean, those are my kind of guys, And Tobey Awaka is a good athlete, too. But I think they have the matchup for Kalkbrenner. I think they have the matchup kind of all around. And I think Tennessee's defense and the fact that they pressure a lot and, like, the way they hard hedge ball screens, I think that's kind of the way to beat Creighton, because you're going to have Kalkbrenner on a short roll and make him a playmaker. That's just not something he does a lot. Can he do it? Maybe. We'll see. But I think the way they hard hedge ball screens and just will make Creighton just have to shoot over them, over a stretch hand and play physical, I think that is the way to beat Creighton. I think you can out-muscle Creighton. I think that's what we saw in the non-conference. I think that's kind of what we saw some of which in conference play. Creighton got better against that kind of game, but they haven't seen a team that plays as physical combined with as skilled as Tennessee is. So I've made one bet this week. It was Tennessee -2 at open. I got that before the Friday game. I've got that before the last day of games. I like Tennessee a lot in this spot.
I made one bet and it was the over. I got it 143, and I think I don't see a way in which both teams shoot as poorly as they did the last game too. And it should be up and down pretty fast. Tennessee likes to run a little bit more. You think Tennessee, and you want to assume they're slowing it down a little bit with Rick Barnes, but not this year, right? They play pretty fast. They shoot a lot of transition threes. And so I think this will be a pretty high scoring affair, in which case, you know, if it is, if this game plays into the, you know, mid 70s, low 80s, then I think Creighton's got a great shot, because if you give this team enough really good looks from three, I mean, watch out. They're a better shooting team than Tennessee. Sure. And so if it's just like if it becomes like an up and down, you know, shot contest, yeah, give me Creighton. Tennessee should try to slow it down, but they're not going to. So we'll see.
I would say Creighton definitely probably spaces better in transition, but Tennessee's just the better athletes. Like the fastest.
I don't know about that.
The fastest player on the court is Zakai Ziegler. I don't think that's particularly close. I think Dalton Connect is a better athlete than both. Definitely than Shireman. I'd say than Alexander too, just because of his combination of size and strength, if we're including strength in that too. And Triple J is a good athlete, to his credit. Jordan Gainey, yeah. I think, too, he's fairly fast. I just think they have speed. And I don't know if Creighton has the match for that kind of speed. And I just think that, I think Tennessee's just the more athletic team. So I think it could advantage them.
Yeah. We'll see. The winner of this game, I do think, beats Purdue. And so this one means a lot for Creighton, at least on the Creighton side, right? Tennessee is a harder matchup than Purdue would be. Do you agree with that?
My worry would be, and keep in mind, this is something he does really well, but at the same time, and we'll transition to the Purdue matchup here, is something he does really well, but at the same time, there's something Edie does really well, strength for strength. What happens if Kalkbrenner gets in foul trouble? Because it is not something we've seen all season.
Then we lose. Yeah.
If there's one person who can do it, Zach Edie.
Yep. But I don't – Ryan Kalkbrenner – he's defensive player of the year in the Big East three times for a reason. He just doesn't foul, and he's fantastic at the rim defensively. Zach Edey hasn't faced anyone defensively as good at the rim as Ryan Kalkbrenner this year.
Sure, but has Ryan Kalkbrenner got against someone who's 7'4"?
No. I think if he's even at all limited, Edey, with Kalkbrenner being as good at the rim, then Creighton's guards are just better than Purdue's. Lawyer and Co. not as good.
Yeah.
Trey Alexander's better. Shireman's better.
Yeah. I think Shireman Gillis would be an interesting matchup. And if they want to run TKR for a little bit, I think that is an interesting matchup for just up front. But the guards, yeah. If you're giving me Trey, I think Trey Alexander would just go crazy. Actually, Lance Jones is not a terrible cover for Trey Alexander. Lance Jones, I don't think, scores on him, but I don't think he's a terrible cover.
I don't think Lance Jones covers him, right?
Who would it be? Because they kind of run him at the three a lot.
Let's see.
Because, like, again, I don't think they really have, like, I don't think you need to put someone bigger on Mason Miller. That's my thing.
I had always thought Fletcher Lawyer Braden Smith.
Yeah.
I thought they would guard the one and the two, but maybe not.
I think you'd have to get creative and throw someone on Miller. And then in the Farabello minutes for Creighton, because he's the only bench player on Creighton, then you just don't really have to.
Yeah.
Like, 1-2, then you can put Jones on him and just not be a size mismatch.
Okay, let's play a little game here. In this Tennessee game, how many minutes does the bench have for Creighton? How many minutes does anyone in the bench see?
I think we'll see some Jason Green minutes, because, like, I think he's been giving energy lately. Yeah, he's been really solid lately. He's someone who, if we're talking, like, well, definitely more of an offseason conversation, because we're talking real games right now. But, like, who could, like, take a jump and, like, look to see, like, he'll have to play a decent role next year. But he's someone definitely to watch. You're definitely going to want to watch some of these games back to see, like, all right, what was Jason Green bringing to the table? So he'll probably give me, like, 8, Farabello, 22, call it 30 bench minutes.
Okay. I'm going to hammer the under on Bello's minutes.
Really?
I think Trey and Shireman don't leave the floor, and I think Ashworth plays like 35 minutes.
Yeah, what about Mason Miller? So you've brought up Mason Miller quite a bit.
I think him and Jason Green will just split. Miller will play 25, Green will play 15. Kalkbrenner will play all 40 if he's able to. I think we get like 10 minute bench minutes for Creighton, 15, which is so insane.
What I will want to say is, and we didn't talk about Creighton's previous games. That's my bad because I am hosting the show, which bad decision, Tommy. That was a bad decision, brother. Game one, who did they play game one again? It was Akron. Different half from Akron, but they kind of just took it to him second half. Enrique Freeman, I really like his game. Just shout out to him. I thought he played really well. Mm-hmm. Really well.
Butler legend Ali Ali, RIP.
Yeah. Legend Ali Ali. Yeah. Does he even have the year left or is that his career?
I believe that's the career. That's curtains. Yep.
Yeah. Then the second game against Oregon. I've talked about that. We'll talk about that one later. I was super impressed with the conditioning of the Creighton players. If there's one team you expected to fold as the game went on, it was Creighton. They run five guys.
Yep.
I mean, 50 minutes, we probably saw from a couple guys. The fact that those guys were able to stick in the game for as long as they did, the game straight up, it came down to conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The better conditioned team won, and that was Creighton. That is what this game came down to. That was it in my mind.
Yeah, that's a great take. Cuisinart and Dante were just laboring second OT. They just didn't have it. And when Creighton started doubling the pick and roll on Cuisinart, like they just were gassed. They just didn't have the strength to overcome that. And so, yeah, credits to their training staff at Creighton. Impressive stuff.
100%. That was really impressive to me. So want to shout that out. But I've talked about this 100 times. I know you watched the entire game. I don't know if you were in a position to like fully recall this play, but I've mentioned it like 100 times. So maybe you've like thought about it since. I don't know if you might get it. You don't fucking listen to me. The play, the end of regulation where Dante ended up getting the ball and shooting the free throws to kind of ice it, the 1-on-1, and he missed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember like the inbound, what happened on that inbound play?
For Oregon?
Yeah.
No. Well, I remember that he caught it on the, you know, the right, I guess it would be the right baseline there, but
Che Evans was inbounding it, a 5-star recruit from my area, from like East Coast, but that's not important. But he's inbounding it. He's a freshman. There were two guards on the floor for Oregon at the time. It was Cousinard and Rigsby, because Shelstead had that injury, so he was out for a little bit. I don't know who the other player Oregon had on the floor was. I just can't remember. He wasn't in the play. Neither of those guys moved. They just didn't move. Like, it's 3 seconds passes. Those guys haven't moved yet. So Dante's the only one who comes to the ball and wants the ball. It was baffling. I don't fully understand it. I think that, to me, was the point where the game completely switched. And Cousinard was excellent. Like, flawless in that game. Flawless. Dante, too. In that second half, flawless. Mm-hmm. Did as well as you can against Kalkbrenner, I genuinely think.
Yep.
But neither of those guys went to the ball. Even if Rigsby's shooting those free throws, kid's a laser. Like, I don't know what his free throw percentage is, but just he's an excellent shooter. I think that to me was a complete switch of the game. And then you go down and Shireman hit the shot. He hit that cheeky little floater, right? That was the one that sent it to overtime. Yeah.
That was awesome, man. Baylor Shireman continues to never cease to surprise me.
He's so good. So talented. Yeah. But do we even bother talking about a potential Gonzaga matchup? Because the revenge angle, Nembhard versus Creighton. How do you feel about that?
Oh, we can kind of touch on it.
I think we both think Purdue handles.
Purdue will win, but Ryan Nembhard and Trey Alexander were the same age or same grade they came in.
Yep.
Nembhard didn't tell Alexander he was transferring until he released his announcement, essentially, on like Twitter.
Interesting.
They were good pals, right? Your backcourt mates for two years. I don't think Trey took that super well. And so there would be, you know, a pretty interesting one-on-one. Nembhard's like main reason supposedly for leaving was, you know, to improve the draft stock. Well, Trey Alexander's draft stock went up. I don't know about Nembhard's. So we'll see. I hope that's the matchup that Creighton gets because, I mean, Creighton would win that, I think.
Yeah.
But that would be, man, that would be fascinating. The Nembhard and Alexander one-on-one would be something to write home about.
Yeah. Talk about another team that's just not deep. Gonzaga. They go seven deep at this point, I think.
They expanded the rotation a little bit.
Did they?
I mean, they have, like, Huff played a lot more minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was kind of interesting watching their first two games. I was like, man, I kind of, like, who are you people? Yeah.
Yeah. Huff and Greg. does Greg start and then Dusty Stromer comes off the bench? Yeah. But
yeah.
Yeah, I think the fact that Gonzaga's guards have been playing a lot better recently, particularly Nolan Hickman, he's been playing a lot better recently.
Mm-hmm.
So just credit there. He's been great in the tournament run. But yeah, we talked about how maybe Purdue doesn't have a matchup for Shireman and Alexander. And like I threw out a couple names, but like we don't know how those guys would do on him. But like I think they can like cover enough to like talent, just talent wise.
Yeah.
Gonzaga just does not have a matchup for those two guys. Watson on Shireman, I don't think Watson can cover him on the perimeter.
No, no.
And against Alexander, Hickman's too small. Do they go Stromer? But Stromer's a freshman and he's just not laterally quick.
All right, Patino, relax. No, yeah, that would be a dream matchup for Creighton. Yeah, and down low, EK.
Physical, I think that causes some problems, but just hands up.
Right.
Like, foul. He'll have
if EK is not scoring, if Kalkbrenner is limiting him in any way, then how is – I mean, so many of their points are just, you know, off of little pick and rolls or something where Nembhard creates and dishes it off to him or Watson.
I would say I think Nembhard would be ready for that drop coverage they run. I think Nembhard and Hickman could find ways to score on that.
Yeah.
But I just think Creighton would score more on the other end. And eventually Creighton would go on a kill shot run, and I think the game would be Kudu Road from there. I think that is the dream matchup for Creighton. I think that is the best. Would that be the best possible matchup for Creighton of all the other 15 teams in the tournament?
Oh. Clemson.
Even then, I think the fact that PJ Hall can just – I'm just going to go back to this game because I remember watching it intently. The Butler game, Bowden Kapke was hitting shots from the outside. Shout out Bowden Kapke. PJ Hall drawing Kalkbrenner out of the paint. That is a nightmare in my eyes. I don't think they have the guards to put up with Alexander, but PJ Hall being able to space the floor.
That's reasonable. Yeah, it presents a little bit more of an interest than you're right. You're right. I would rather face Gonzaga than probably anyone for Creighton.
Yeah, which
I guess NC State. I take it back. NC State is the correct answer, but other than them, Gonzaga.
Yeah, NC State. NC State is the correct answer, I think. Yeah. Weirdly enough, I kind of think NC State presents more problems for UConn than the other teams. I still think UConn smokes them, but I think a team that can run four guards and just kind of annoy them for a little bit. Yeah. I don't think they have nearly the system. So I think after like 10 minutes, I think that game would be over. But I think for those 10 minutes, NC State would present a good problem there. And I think if they just get lucky and hit shots, I don't know, when in Rome. I don't think NC State presents any problem for any of the Big East teams, to be clear.
Fair. How many final? So you got what, one Final Four team from the Big East?
Yes.
Okay.
Who would you have?
Two. Give me UConn for sure, and then truly coin flip for Marquette and Creighton. Both heads tails. One of them gets in. One of them doesn't.
All right. Well. Yeah, I don't know if we have anything else to talk about the tournament. We can talk. I mean, if you got any other notes, otherwise we'll move on to something. Tommy and I don't think we talked about last week that we probably should have.
Sure, let's do it.
All right, Chris Holtman to DePaul. The DePaul Blue Demons have a new coach. I was going to do a thing where I teased it, and I already said the name first, so I can't do that. Chris Holtman, what are your thoughts on this hire first?
Boy, it's certainly an upgrade, right? Like, he's a better coach than they have had for a while. Actually, since they joined the Big East, I think Chris Holtman's the best coach they've had. And so, yeah, this gives him a fighting shot, even with the NIL restrictions they have. Was there other names that I was kind of hoping would be in that spot? Absolutely, right? But Chris Holtman was a realistic candidate, and he got the job, and it'll be fine. DePaul will be better than they were for the last number of years.
Yeah. Who are some of the other candidates you were hoping to get this job? Because honestly, I feel like Holtman, aside from one, maybe two guys, but I think those were dream candidates. I think Holtman's kind of the best guy they could have hired.
You may be right. Like Schertz was a guy that I was hoping. I'm not sure if that was ever going to be realistic. Yeah. And then Pat Kelsey. If any job becomes available, Pat Kelsey would be my number one call. If the Celtics became available right now, Pat Kelsey would be my call. Pat Kelsey's the best coach in the world.
If the Celtics came available, Micah Shrewsbury should be their first call, and I think he takes it. If they want to steal a Brad Stevens guy, I think it's Shrewsbury. But just for the this matchup, first of all, obviously DePaul wants to be more competitive in NIL. We'll see how that ends up. Like, we've heard DePaul talking about, like, I think the AD does some stuff where he'll, like, talk about, like, yeah, we want to have more competitive NIL. I think that is something they're really emphasizing, and I think that was part of the reason they ended up getting a Holtman rather than a Schertz, someone who has experience kind of fundraising in that sense. But another benefit to me of hiring Chris Holtman, all things considered, is Holtman won at a tough Big East job. It is not easy to win at Butler in the Big East. Butler's one of the bottom-tier jobs. I love the Bulldogs. Don't get it twisted.
Yep.
Butler's one of the bottom-tier jobs in the Big East because Butler doesn't have the financial investment that a Georgetown, a Villanova, even a Creighton does, even a Xavier. Holtman, not only did he win in the Big East there, every single year is above 500, 2-12 and 6 years, 1-10 and 8 year. Made the tournament all 3 years at Butler. It's a guy who knows how to coach, and I think he's getting discredited because of how his Ohio State tenure ended. But, I mean, for the most part, he did a good job there. And now he gets kind of get back to, like, what he was as a coach, which was one thing he was really good at was shutting down your best option. So you got to take something, you take something away, then you get to your second, third option. You just have to do something there. I think it'll take a little bit for DePaul to fully be competitive because DePaul loses literally everyone to the portal. It will be an entirely new DePaul team, like just 100%. You might recognize a name, but it'll be an entirely new team. So it'll take some time to build everything, get some of his high school recruits in, get some of that foundation built. It's not going to happen overnight. DePaul's not going to be good next year. But I think this is one of the best hires they can make. They hired someone who has experience in the Big East, experience building programs, experience winning in the Big East. And I really think that's all you can ask for. And he is a good X's and O's coach who also can recruit and you hope can kind of mix of doing both and get the program respectable. Because DePaul hasn't been respectable in a long time. Stubbs almost made them respectable, but never did. Lato, the second tenure, never made them respectable. You need to gain some respect. And I think Holtman can do that in year one.
Yeah. Agreed. Before the last 2 years at Ohio State, he won 20 straight games there, five straight seasons to begin his Ohio State tenure. The only thing that gives me a little bit of pause is that, you know, you take 2 years ago, they had Sensabaugh, Zedke, Suing, McNeil, the West Virginia transfer. They had a lot of really talented guys. In fact, a more talented roster than I think he would be able to build at DePaul, at least for a while. And he didn't make the tournament. And same with this year, probably a more talented roster than he will have at DePaul for at least a few years. And so keep your expectations in check is all I would say. He's not a miracle worker. He's going to, you know, once he gets good talent in, he'll probably coach to that talent, but I don't know. It's not like DePaul is going to go get into the NCAA tournament in the next 3 years, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to be optimistic, year three, maybe. But maybe. Keep in mind, DePaul hasn't made the tournament since they've been in the Big East.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I overall think it's a really good hire. I think one note Chris hit on, and I'm just going to expand on his point because that was a good point, is when he had, like, E.J. Liddell was an All-American. E.J. Liddell could have – was he really a National Player of the Year candidate? I don't know, but, like, he was on that level, sure. And Malachi Branham, that's a one-and-done. He just found a one-and-done, and he got him to the program. That was the last team of his Ohio State respectable. Then Dwayne Washington, E.J. Liddell just suing. I mean, he had Seth Towns at one point. Still kicking it in college. Shout out Seth Towns. Yeah, so I don't know. I think it'll take him some time to fully get his guys in, fully get that talent in. But when he had that thing rolling at Ohio State, I think that's probably about as good as we're going to see Ohio State for a hot minute. Like, maybe they can reach that same ceiling they had, but I don't know if they push over getting consistent two seeds. And if you're DePaul, all things considered, you're probably the worst job in the Big East right now.
Yes.
The fact that you can have a coach in the Big East who has experienced winning in the Big East, I think that is as good as it gets.
Yeah. Yeah. No more notes from me. It was a good hire. It wasn't, you know, it's not going to be a world changing hire, but it's going to be good enough to get them respect. You hit on the main point there, and that's big.
All right. We got a couple other things I wanted to talk about. First, this happened today. Very minor news note, but, like, what the hell? We should talk about it. Hashtag the return, Devin Carter. Imagine he returns. You think it happens? It happens, right? He's returning, right?
No, no, get out of here. He's not returning. Everyone can shut up about it. It's not going to happen. He's trolling you. Actually, no, I don't think he's trolling. I think he probably really will consider it. Sounds like him and Kim English have you know, a pretty special bond, but he's not going to improve his draft stock to me all that much if he comes back. Like, it's really high right now. And so, yeah, you can come back and get a year older and have fun in college. And maybe that's what he wants to do. And I hope he does, because it'd be great. But no, it's not going to happen. And if it did, you know, some miracle, it happened, like, Providence's roster is really up in the air right now. Like, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what, why would he do this? I don't get it.
Yeah, I think he likes the school, clearly. But yeah, no would be what I'd say. This also, I think this has to be mentioned because it factors in. This is the worst draft class we've seen in a while, which means Devin Carter could be a lottery pick. If Devin Carter, if there's any year Devin Carter's a lottery pick, probably in the next 10 years, it's this year.
Mm-hmm.
Get the bag while you can, man. Get that bag, get that lottery bag. You're going to make millions quickly.
Yeah.
Don't risk it. And especially if he comes back and gets hurt. Oh my God. Right. I'd feel terrible. Yeah. Get the bag, man. Just get the bag. We don't need to play this game. And even let's say he returns, let's say Providence also returns Hopkins. Oduro Gaines still gone. You hope Pierre, Floyd, some of the other backcourt pieces return. You lose Dual. Even then, Providence roster is still kind of up in the air. I don't know what would make me think they're going to be better than they were this year, aside from the fact that you have a fully healthy Hopkins, obviously. Better than they were with Bryce Hopkins.
And Bryce, yeah, he changes a lot, and maybe he does. I mean, I assume Devin Carter and Bryce Hopkins are really close, and maybe they just want one more go together, you know, as a duo with Kim English, and that would be a really fun story. And I do think they would find the pieces around them to make that team an NCAA tournament team, and probably a fairly decent lock for the NCAA tournament. But it's still not going to be, yeah, unless they hit, you know, some massive gains in the portal, it's not going to be like a, you know, a top four seed in the tournament type thing. So what are we doing here? I don't know.
Yeah, just go pro. I think that covers it all. Just go pro. Lastly, more so, because I don't think this is happening anymore. I don't know if we really thought it was happening originally. That's part of the question I'm going to ask you. But what was kind of your reaction when you saw Shaheen Holloway rumored at Louisville? Just like quick, like you see the tweet of like Shah's interviewing at Louisville. What were you thinking?
Oh, that was my reaction. I didn't expect it. Yeah. It felt like to me, this is where Holloway wanted to be at least for a long while. I mean, it's his alma mater. He has a lot of support right now in the program. Like, I didn't think this was even on the table. And let alone, I didn't think he was qualified for the Louisville job, in my opinion. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. That's not a, you know, an insult to Shah, but Louisville is a huge brand with a really storied history. And Shaheen Holloway hasn't made an NCAA tournament with a high major team. That's what it is. You know, he's a good coach. He didn't make it this year. He didn't make it last year. What do you want me to say? Like, yeah. I didn't think he would get offered the job.
The fact that, so first of all, whenever you hear Shaheen Holloway talk, he talks about like that New Jersey toughness, right? Like, yeah. New Jersey is kind of like part of his like identity. So if he's going to take a bigger job, I think it'd be something local. I don't know what that would be, but just think it would be, hypothetically speaking. But yeah, I saw that and I'm like, I just don't see the fit. Like, that just doesn't feel like a job Shah would take. That said, it is an excellent job. Louisville is a substantially better job than Seton Hall. I think Louisville, Louisville is a top 10 job in the sport in my eyes, top 15 maybe. It's up there. The fit would have felt weird. Just for that reason, I'm like, I don't think he's taking it. I think he'd use it as leverage. But I mean, if he took Louisville, like, that would be excellent. But yeah, New Jersey toughness, it just didn't fit with me. Louisville has royally screwed up this head coaching hire. Like, royally screwed it up. So that was, like, jump out to me. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't think Shah, like, if you were, you asked Louisville fans after probably November of this year who you want your next coach at Louisville to be, I don't think Shaheen Holloway would have been a top 10 name.
No. Like, absolutely.
I don't even think they would have thought of him as, like, an option, really. So.
And part of me still thinks, like.
And I think Shah will get it going at Seton Hall, too. Like, I do think he will get it going. I'm confident in that. But that was early for a job that I think is as prestigious as Louisville is.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't know. It's to be honest though, this is not going to happen. No. I think they're going to pivot a different direction. It sounds like the names involved, there's enough different ones that are going to stand ahead of Shaw.
Like, but they're mentioning Richard Pitino, which would be hilarious.
I wonder what Rick would think.
I do too. I feel like he'd be like, yeah, take it. But
maybe. I wonder if there's like, is there any like foul blood still, or I don't know what the situation is, the relationship between that school and, yeah, and Rick. But it'd be interesting.
That is the funniest possible outcome. Like, it is.
Is that's the other thing, right? Is Louisville that desperate to pick a coach like Pitino, who I don't think has won an NCAA tournament game? Did he at Minnesota for 1 year?
I thought he had won at Minnesota.
Maybe. Okay, so one NCAA tournament win, or, you know, Shaheena Holloway, who hasn't won a game in the NCAA tournament at a high major. Is that where they're at? Like, there has to be options that are interested in that job that have a history of winning.
Yeah, I think so too. But I mean, they're there. Kelsey's another name that was mentioned, I believe, briefly.
Another guy that hasn't won an NCAA tournament game.
Josh Schertz, who hasn't even made an NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
The fact that they couldn't get Dusty May, that's crazy. But Louisville, they're not in the Big East anymore. Ooh. Nah, that's an
off-season. Oh, no.
That is an off-season question for sure. That's all I got, Christian, for anything, any other qualms or topics you would discuss and engage discourse in?
I don't have anything. I hope we get two teams in the Final Four. This is a pretty big weekend for the Big East as a conference, especially with, you know, we didn't have very many opportunities to win the units or whatever, the money associated, almost $2 million per win, it sounds like. Pile on as many of those bad boys as we can.
Yeah, let's make some money. Go straight to the NIL. That's not how it works, is it? That's just not how it works.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I'm not smart enough to figure that out. That's it. Chris, anything you want to plug, any message you want to give to the people, even though they don't fucking know who you are, they should give their fucking head a shake. But
yeah, they should. Anyone who's listening to this certainly knows who I am. But at CTheDinga on Twitter, Dinga and DeRosa is me and Michael's other podcast where we talk more national stuff. We held our own here. We stayed in the Big East, stayed in our lane, so that was good. But yeah, check that out.
Yeah, that was the big worry. That's it. Friends, people, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. And if Tommy isn't here next time, I want every single person to send him an angry message on Twitter.